Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to episode 127 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. I'm going to give the audience a pre-apology for any audio here. I am in a remote location in a hotel room, and I can hear myself not sounding great, but that's the reality. So we're going to trundle on with it, and we're going to start with a perhaps much-needed vibe check for a Blue Jays team that has been in worse straits since we last spoke.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I think the last one, before we do these, I looked it up, and it's like, oh, yeah, I wrote Six Gods, which that's had a weird little week in its own right. But you know, the vibes were not awful. They finally scored six runs when we went to air. You know, they had just done that a week ago, but, you know, the more it accumulates, the more it's, you know, four series losses in a row. You got the Phillies on the schedule, most wins in baseball. You got the Nationals you just played and looked real ugly there. Obviously, the vibes are not good.
Yeah, it's interesting because it feels like the drum has been hit repeatedly for John Schneider to be fired and talk of kind of the walls closing in on him. And I've never really believed it before. Like, it just felt like too much of an admission that the front office had made a mistake. Just, you know, as a process-oriented group, he was someone that there was reason to believe in, someone they liked a lot. And maybe not as much evidence of him being a terrible manager as people believed. Like, I've never thought there's been much evidence that he's a great manager by any means, but there's been an exaggeration, at least in my view, about how terrible he's been. And this is the first time where I've kind of found myself thinking I could see that happening, because the team is in, you know, their playoff odds. And again, those change very quickly, but hovering around the 25% mark, they're at the bottom of the division. They've lost a few series in a row, including to the Washington Nationals. You know, the pitching situation is looking worse than anticipated, and the offense hasn't really swung around back to compensate for that. And I don't know, like, I guess at the beginning of the season, it was probably a bit of a coin flip over whether they'd make the playoffs, and they're not dead by any means, but I could see them making a move because there's not that many things the front office can do, at least at this point. And I'm not saying getting rid of Schneider would suddenly make the team good, but we have seen those bounces before by getting a new voice in the room. Again, it's not necessarily something I'm advocating for, but I find myself believing that it could happen in the nearest future for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, it's believable. I can't say that it's not. I mean, I would like to think, I think a lot of people would like to think, that maybe that's not a lever that you let the current GM pull, right? I would love to see DeMarlo Hale get a job. That'd be cool, assuming that it's him. Could be Mattingly. Could be, you know, they could look in a number of directions, I guess, if that's really the road that they go down. I don't know. Like, I hate the punt, and I do, you know, it did feel, you know, some panicky situations, and yeah, I'm with you. I'm defensive of all managers because I think, yeah, it no matter who it is, it gets exaggerated, you know. And I always like to remember, and I've reminded people a couple times this season, like, John Gibbons was not a well-liked manager, and people didn't like when they brought him back. They didn't like that he fought Ted Lilly in the dugout, and they didn't like a lot about him until games started getting one, and then suddenly he's Gibby the best. He's a legend. He's, you know, all of the things that make him charming sort of stood out more. And I mean, I think that could be an act, like, absolutely. The scenario that we would see happen with John Schneider, the scenario you could see happen with any manager. But, you know, he might just be running out of time. I mean, I think it's still too early. I think it is, you know, a conversation. Like, we don't go into, you know, I mean, we're not like super serious, you know, we're not Edward R. Murrow here, but, like, you know, it's worth, you know, it's worth a conversation worth having, I think, at this stage, because, yeah, there isn't a lot that the team can do. It would still surprise me at this point. It would, you know, I don't know where their heads are at and when they, you know, how bad it has to get before they genuinely think about pulling the plug. And I'm sure that they don't have, you know, the same timeline that a lot of fans do at this point, who are, I think, probably ready to flush the whole thing, frankly. That's at least sort of the temperature I got. And maybe I'm reading that wrong. It is the loud stuff does get more notice, obviously. But yeah, people are angry out there, and they've been angry for a long time. And I think that has added to its own exaggeration effect a little bit. You know, nobody really appreciated that they won 89 games last year because they should have been better. Nobody appreciated, you know, the year before they're firing the manager. Then they're, you know, they missed the playoffs by one game on the last day of the season with the team that, you know, that was probably the best of this era. We're probably, like, we had that conversation over the winter last year, and it doesn't feel any less true at this point. You know, I don't think that it's, I don't put any of this on, honestly, on Schneider, but, like, that's just not the business, right? I think, you know, perhaps the guys who were so certain that they were going to get the hitters right, that they didn't need to go out and get better hitters, should have had a better idea that that was going to happen. And then even still, you know, the depth issues, the pitching staff, the bullpen not being where we expected it to be. I mean, these are all, it's still very early, but you know, they can't take too much more of this without, you know, without people tuning out and eventually some sort of a change having to happen.
Yeah, and the way managers are evaluated, again, we do not have the complete picture. A lot of it comes from the way the team is covered, because the manager is the one who interacts with the media more than anyone else. So sometimes a manager can get a disproportionate amount of goodwill on account of being liked by the media, or the opposite can be true. And I think Schneider is fairly neutral here. I don't think he gets absolutely hammered in any way, but I don't think he's done a ton of favors. And a lot of the time, you also see managers judged on sort of the results of the bullpen. And Schneider is in a tough spot, and we'll get into the bullpen a little bit later in some depth, but where they had a really good bullpen last season, and they had basically the same cast of characters again this year. And so it seems like he must be pulling the wrong levers, because what he's doing is not working with a group of players that the fan base has proof of concept is good. Now, we know that with the volatility of relievers, that's not necessarily true. Like, the same name is not the same pitcher when it comes to relievers year to year, other than some of the very most elite players. But when he's going to the bullpen and he's calling for X or Y guy and it's just simply not working, that feels like, oh, he must be making the wrong moves. He must be pushing the wrong buttons. I'm not sure that's 100% true, but if you look ahead at the schedule, you're looking at Phillies. You're looking at Twins, who have been really hot.
Really
then
good.
You're looking, yeah, at the Orioles. Then you're looking at the Rays. Like, there's a world where we get to kind of the back third of May, and the Blue Jays are in a real
hole. You
do get
the White Sox, I think, then, but like, yeah, you can't.
Yeah,
they can't let it slide until the White Sox come.
I cut it off for dramatic effect.
Sorry.
No, but there's a world where this next stretch, and yeah, you're right, they could make it back against the White Sox and the Tigers and find them way. At the end of May, things could look different again, but you could sit, you know, an amount under 500 that you feel pretty uncomfortable with in a couple weeks. And that's part of the reason you're seeing pieces written right now about the Blue Jays selling. And I think the Blue Jays are a fascinating seller if they get there. You might recall that they didn't really do that well with the first sell at the beginning of the Shapiro-Atkins era. They did not get much out of it, Teoscar Hernandez being kind of the star piece. I'm not saying that they would not do well this time. I think they would, because there's a lot of interesting pieces there. But yeah, I don't know. I think the temperature could continue to get turned up over the next couple of weeks. The alternative being, if this team has a nice stretch here, holds its own, and then is able to go on a run in that White Sox, Tigers, Pirates stretch, you know, a month from now, people will be like, it's insane that we had this conversation. And that's part of what's wild about baseball. I've said it before. I think we probably don't pay enough attention to the schedule in front of teams. It's a huge factor in how teams are viewed at any given time, but it could get worse before it gets better. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That schedule is a bit of a meat grinder. I get this feeling these are the types that are not going to go into a move like that lightly, unless it's the GM, and that's, I mean, something that people have talked about. You know, do you want these guys? Do you want these same people? I mean, you're running out. You've got to start thinking about this now if you're going to have a fire sale at the end of July, which we're, like you say, we're still a long way from. It's something that's been in the background. I think it is fair. You know, I think people make too much of it when Ken Rosenthal says, yeah, you know, if things keep going badly, they might justifiably be sellers. Like, that's basically all he said. It's not like, oh, yeah, this is definitely happening. You know, but that's still a lot more eyes than you would expect on something that's pretty, you know, moving towards finality in terms of this era, which, you know, I mean, you're a younger man than I, but like the way that they dragged out JP Ricciardi's tenure, the way that you know, and it's not the same people. There's no Paul Godfrey there, but there's sort of some of those background. Eddie Rogers was around in those days. I don't know if he had as much of a hand in it, but I mean, that felt very much like they waited a couple years too long, to the point where it was like the fire JP chants are in the crowd, and it just didn't make sense. And it just, I think they, you know, and financially they kind of saw where their reset was going to be. And it took them, they just didn't bother. And there's a lot of, like, I don't know if it's that specific situation is going on, but like, there's a lot of mediocrity across the game right now. That's something fans kind of, you know, you don't see really beyond your own team that you follow, but man, there's a lot of, I mean, everybody thought, oh, the Giants had that great offseason that we wish the Blue Jays had, and that is not going well. You know, there's a lot of teams not hitting. It's wild because you see Shohei Ohtani out there hitting 500 for a week and you know, just dropping bombs everywhere. He's incredible. But this is a factor, and this is something, and I to my detriment, I will admit, always kind of got me in the back of my mind, but I would when they talked about expanding the playoffs, I was kind of like of the mind, I don't care what it's going to do competitively, because the Blue Jays have just been in such a bad spot behind the Yankees and the Red Sox in this division. And then the Rays sort of came along, and it was just like, you know, something to open this up, because we're so confined in this spot where it's much easier for other teams to make the playoffs every year, and the Jays are just in a bad spot relative to the rest of the league and people, the detractors of expanding the playoffs, among many, you know, issues they had with it. It was like it might incentivize mediocrity. It might make teams think, you know, 81 wins, and if it breaks right, then we have a really great year. And if it doesn't, well, we can, like, maybe they're thinking about, you know, just resetting their way through rather than having any sort of strong pivot into a fire sale. Well, that's something that they ought to be thinking about right now. And it's fascinating, I think, to look around the league and see how tolerated some of this mediocrity is. And that makes me wonder about how much tolerance they're going to have for the more continuing mediocrity in this franchise.
Yeah, I think the sweet spot was really the two wild cards in the wild card game. Like, as crazy as that wild card game can be, and as unfair, it was also unbelievable drama. Mm-hmm. And because there was a single game, avoiding that and winning a division was still heavily incentivized. But the difference between a three-game series, which feels more just in a sense, and a five-game series is pretty small. And so I feel like it's not winning the division. You know, it's been a talking point in Blue Jays land because of how their wild card series have gone recently. But it is not that significant a difference. And so having that wild card game where you really want to avoid it, but if you do get there, it's high drama and fewer total teams in the playoffs, I think creates a better ecosystem for the league in terms of competitive balance. And what we're seeing now, as you said, it's just a lot of, you know, there's a couple teams that are really, really good, obviously, like the Dodgers and the Braves, but there's a lot of muck right now. And as it happens, the Blue Jays are at the bottom of that mucky middle. I think they're still in the mucky middle for now, but that might not persist. We'll see how that goes. We tend to start with, if we have one, a good transactional alert, we tend to start with it, but we've got some pretty bad ones here. So we pushed it below the vibe check. Do you have any interest in the arms the Toronto Blue Jays have brought in? We're talking Joel Kunal, Bo Salser, or old friend Aaron Sanchez. And I know that last week we talked quite extensively about the lack of starting depth on this team and lack of arms in general, kind of beyond your top guys. And so adding something to the organization can generally be seen as a positive, but at the same time, hard to be inspired here.
Yeah. You know, there's no such thing as a bad minor league deal, but that's lipstick on a pig. I mean, Aaron Sanchez is fun. It's an interesting story. There was the Drew Hutchison thing a couple of years back, or was that even last year? And it didn't mean much. It didn't mean much to the fans, even though it was a familiar name. I don't think that there's any, you know, people are like, oh, well, this is it's like the Votto thing. Is it just things are going badly? Here's a name from the past. And I appreciate the cynicism required to like to actually believe that. But I don't know. He's a living, breathing pitcher who can still probably get it up into at least the low 90s. I don't even know where Aaron Sanchez is at because I haven't really, you know, I'm not out there on his Savant page trying to dig into what he's been doing in the minor leagues, which I believe not very good.
No, not great.
I mean, I think he's just a warm body for Buffalo, really. I mean, I don't think we need to make too much more of it than that. Kunal and Salser, maybe more than that. I don't know. I feel that these are all three guys who are, if they're logging more than an inning or two for you this season, things have gone really, really awry. And I don't think they're there yet. they might be close, but I don't think that they're in terms of, you know, the big picture awry has not hit us yet. This slow moving train wreck that's been in progress since the end of 2021 has not quite hit us. And that's maybe even unfair, you know, getting Kevin Gausman, getting Chris Bassett, they've done some good things on the way if we're really zooming back. But it's felt not great for quite a long time. A lot of people have recognized that. I think a lot of people, like I said earlier, you know, when you mentioned the exaggeration effect with Schneider, you know, I don't know if people appreciated that, you know, the 2022 season that Vlad had, the seasons that Bo's had, and certainly not the ones he's having this year, but either of them are having this year. But, you know, Kevin Gausman's been a great pitcher. There's been more bright spots than I think people have been really, really focused on the negative. Some might say because they felt they were sold a bill of goods and felt that there was, you know, generational talent here that's being wasted. Hard to look at that at this point and feel that way quite as much, but still very early in the season, still lots of good stuff. I wrote about this last week about, you know, the things that go into Zips and projection systems and how they're still bullish on these guys, just based on what those systems are designed to do and do better than than humans normally and other similar systems, while also not remotely being perfect or spot on in any sense. It has been snowballing for a while since the Charlie Montoyo days. I don't know. It's just not a fun place to be at the moment, I don't think. And so that's why there's these big questions. And I mean, I think contemplating whether Aaron Sanchez is going to pitch for your team in the year 2024, I mean, that might be a pretty loud answer to some of the big questions about, you know, the state of where things are and where you're going.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Sanchez is a guy who has not pitched this season, as far as we know, at least in a professional affiliated capacity. Last year, he gave you 89 innings of 5.54 ERA ball at AAA. Somehow he's only 31, which a lot of people brought up, which does feel odd because he's been in our consciousness for a long time. Yeah, it's hard to look at any of these guys and think it's anything more than bodies. I will say there's possibility here that Joel Kunal, that's our level of familiarity here, might be the largest man in the major leagues. He's listed at 290 pounds. I don't know if there's anyone listed larger than that. So, if he shows up and he's enormous, people might at least take note of that. It'll make him somewhat different. But yeah, these are these are bodies. The Aaron Sanchez thing is just a little bit weird because the front office has to be aware that there is that, you know, that history and that memory. And if I were them, I wouldn't want to do anything that would create expectations. And, you know, I'm not saying that Jays fans aren't savvy enough to understand that Aaron Sanchez is not a difference maker at this point in his career, but I would probably have just chosen someone the fans don't know if you're just going to get a body in there, and someone who's perhaps, you know, pitching right now, because I don't know what the process will be for that. So it just seems like an odd choice in multiple respects, considering there's, and maybe this is unfair, but I'm going to say it anyway, no upside whatsoever. If you're going to be in the no upside whatsoever bin, I'd rather just go with someone anonymous who will make no ripples, whereas Aaron Sanchez made minor ripples at best. But
yeah, I think that's fair. I think, well, I mean, maybe there's some, like, he's familiar with the team. He's familiar. He knows where to park.
He doesn't. Yeah, he literally doesn't have to ask people where to go. So there's that.
Yeah.
Another big news from the Buffalo region is the man who returned from Buffalo, Alek Manoah, and it was a rough debut for Mr. Manoah. There's no doubt about that in 2024 because of Yariel Rodriguez and Bowden Francis. The Blue Jays kind of need him. He's kind of installed as a fifth starter unless things are truly disastrous. What was your take on the Manoah debut? Was it as grim as the numbers suggest in your view?
I thought so, kind of, yeah. I don't know. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, we all know the story. Just really haven't seen it for a while. And, like, even the brief flashes that we've seen where there's maybe a little bit of hope, like, you can't get, like, your head beat in by Yankee teens. And then, you know, that again kind of happened this spring. And you know, how can anyone be surprised if an outing against big league hitters goes really poorly? Like, it's, the confidence level is just not there, and I think justifiably so. And so it's tough to try to continue to pick out, you know, silver linings from outings like this, even if this one did look, you know, the top line just was particularly bad.
Yeah, it is interesting because there has been some discussion about how this sort of stuff was there. And to some degree, that's true. You saw kind of the 94-ish mile per hour on both fastball. The slider had a little bit more horizontal movement, which has been a big talking point with it. Like, when he was really going, he had the slider with a break. You know, in 2022, his big season, it was 78% above average. In this recent outing, it was 76. Last year, it was down to 44. So there's a little bit of the frisbee coming back to that pitch in theory, but in practice, like, you just have to be able to locate so much better than he did. Like, he, you know, he didn't have control. He didn't have command. As you said, there just hasn't been evidence, even in the minor league, that that's coming. And when you talk about Alek Manoah and stuff, and, like, oh, okay, fundamentally the stuff is here. First of all, like, it just doesn't matter. If you can't locate at all, it doesn't matter if your stuff is really good at a certain point. Like, you can look at where he threw his sliders in that game, and you can look at the heat map there, and it's just center. It's red as can be, center. It's like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer's nose is poking out through that imaginary box. So you simply can't do that. It doesn't matter if you have the horizontal movement. The other thing to know is that Manoah was never really a quote-unquote huge stuff guy. Like, he was a limiting contact guy. He was never had huge velocity. What made him special was the ability to attack hitters in places and in ways that was going to elicit soft contact. So if you are him and you're using that stuff and you have no command, like, there's a lot of guys who throw 94, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of guys who have a little bit of sweep on the slider. Like, that's never what made him good. Like, sure, the fact we see that means that in theory, in the future, we might be able to see the rest click into place. But him, you know, a version of him with highly diminished command and sort of the stuff we've seen before is not a very good pitcher. Like, he needs to get that very high level stuff back. And it's weird because he's a pitcher who almost had command without control, because he would sometimes go slightly wild and he would sometimes hit guys.
Yeah.
But more often than not, the majority of the time, he was fundamentally getting the ball to where it needed to be. And so we think of command and control as so much more correctable as stuff. But these things fluctuate, you know, stuff fluctuates too. Guys pick up miles per hour, they lose miles per hour. And so, yeah, I think I'm sort of generally the type of person who's going to say, oh, the stuff is here and blah, 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 and that's going to be the thing that matters. We have to look at the process. But command and control is a big part of the process with Manoa. And it has just been so thoroughly absent that it's getting harder and harder to believe. And, I was someone who before the season said, you know, sometimes pitchers have a year where they lose it. And let's not forget how good Manoa was. And he's one of the guys who has a little bit of ceiling and projection busting compared to what you'd expect. And this is one outing, but it's also one outing in conjunction with what he did in the minor leagues. And, you know, when you're believing in Alek Manoa at this point, it's just sort of an exercise in faith. It's like, I just think he'll be good again, because sometimes guys are good again. Like, that's really what you're doing, because there's nothing that he's doing that makes you think, oh, okay, this is on the path to being good.
No, it's not. But like, if you told me that, you know, 40 starts from now, you know, when we get farther from the PRP injections and the downtime because of, you know, whatever's happened with his shoulders or whatever is going on in his arm, if he got to the point where he could find that command a little bit better, if he had a really long stretch, I could start to believe again. But they've got him in this situation where he's not a project for them right now. He is, but he isn't. He's a guy that they need to depend on, and it's just a really bad situation for him. And it's complicated, of course, because of like what happened last year when they tried to send him down. But I mean, it feels like this is a guy who needs to go and pitch in AAA for a year, and he doesn't really have that runway to do that at the moment. And maybe, you know, Francis and Rodriguez come back and they can shuffle him away and things will get, you know, can get better, and maybe someone other team will see something in him, or you know, who knows where that all goes. But like, I wouldn't say that that's gone. I think that's probably too pessimistic. But yeah, I mean, I in an ideal world, you'd want to see him get like 7-8 starts that are pretty good in AAA, where he is commanding, where the velocity is where it needs to be, and they just don't have that time right now, which is unfortunate. I mean, that's the nature of the game sometimes, but. It's making it look like, you know, it's just making it look like a worse situation than it maybe is. But yeah, it is a matter of faith at this point, because he's just, he doesn't really have any business being in a big league rotation.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, as you point out, that you could interpret the situation as being really bad for him because he needs to spend time in AAA in the minors, a little bit away from the spotlight, although the spotlight will find him, to be honest. Like there will be discussion of him, even if he's in the minor leagues, the way there would be with a big prospect. But at the same time, I guess you could, if you are desperate to be positive, and I don't think many Blue Jays fans are, but if you were...
it doesn't feel like that's gone at this point. Yeah.
But if you were desperate...
Not just on him either, obviously.
No. That's an across-the-board thing. But if you were desperate to be positive, I think what you could say is that it might be nice for him to have a bit of sense of security. Now, the sense of security is objectively a bad thing for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Blue Jays would like to have more options, but the Blue Jays don't have options right now. So he can maybe feel like the Grim Reaper isn't hanging out across his shoulder, and that over his shoulder, I suppose. That's where the Grim Reaper likes to hang out.
He does.
And so as a result, maybe there's some component of him being able to settle in. But to be honest, like, it's just such a weird situation, and he's just so under the microscope that even if one bad start doesn't mean that he's going to go down, there's still, he still has to get a good start. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't, just because one thing isn't going to cause you to be back in the minors where there's issues and you think you're a major league pitcher and there's all whatever drama arises from that, you know, performing poorly at the major league level is definitely not the solution to problems for either the team or the player. And yeah, I, like you said, if, you know, 40 starts from now, whatever that looks like, if that's a different organization, if that requires more time at AAA, like he is young, he is strong, you know, the stuff has a proof of concept. He's been a mentally tough individual in the past who has, has overcome some things. Like, it's not impossible to envision this road to him being an effective MLB starter again, but it's hard to imagine that happening in short order in a way that competitively boosts the Toronto Blue Jays, especially the 2024 edition.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Which is it's a bit grim. And any transition yeah. I could make in the show would be speaking of grim, but I'm going to use that here. Say, speaking of grim is what's going on beyond the starters. Like, you are looking at a bullpen that has a 5.31 ERA and the Fangraphs WAR of -1.3, which is just brutal. And when you look at this group, I know we've done, you know, confidence checks on the individual players, but what do you see in terms of the bounce back potential here? And what about this, you know, the Romano-Swanson duo that I think a lot of Blue Jays fans have lost plenty of faith in? I think if you ask Blue Jays fans right now, many of them would be like, you know, Garcia is a guy and almost literally no one else is.
I mean, and I think that would be fair. I think, you know, Jordan Romano, as beloved as he is, I think, particularly among a certain cohort of Jays fans, I mean, people have felt that wild ride thing from him, right? Like when he debuted earlier in the season, I remember, you know, I don't like to be like this, but it was kind of like, all right, here we go. And it just as much as you can look, and I'm sure we've talked about this, but you look across the board at like his, you know, the number of like his saves, his conversions, his shutdowns, meltdowns, all that stuff, you know, all, and even, you know, deeper peripherals about, you know, what he's been as a pitcher. He's been really, really good. And I think it's been another one of those things where people have been a little, probably a little exaggerated in their negativity, but which makes it so much worse when he really is going real badly. You know, Swanson, I have obviously, I mean, everybody like saw, knows the story of what happened with his son and spring training. And that was obviously a traumatic thing to go through. And I have lots of time for him, you know, being able to get himself, you know, together and back, just back into pitching shape. And, you know, that was a real gap in his spring. And I think there's some leeway there that you kind of have to give him, but it's been tough. It's been real tough. And I think that those are, you know, this is the thing. People thinking it's more of the same for this. It's really not. I mean, like Bichette has been so terrible. Springer has fallen off another cliff. Swanson and Romano just going away. You know, these aren't necessarily permanent things, obviously, but like that's not the team that we watched last year win 89 games and while also still being incredibly maddening. I mean, but you do see like the velocity's there for Swanson right now. The strikeouts aren't. I mean, I'm sure we could drill down. You know, he's had troubles with runners on base. I mean, everything's been a mess there. I don't know what you do about it other than keep moving him down the pecking order and waiting for him to figure it out. But like I said, like with Manoa, I mean, this team is, and especially, you know, the schedule that you were talking about earlier. I mean, the team's just, they're far from out of time, but they're getting to a stage where if it keeps going as bad as it has for the last month or the last four or five series, they'll end up buried because there are strong teams around them and they're going to have to play them at some point again. And, you know, Boston's been a surprise, in fact, right? And the Orioles have not taken a step backwards, which I don't know if anybody really thought they would, but it's the Yankees were not a great team last year, and they're not you know, Judge isn't even necessarily going, and yet they're everything's peachy for the Yankees and the Orioles right now, and so it makes that really, really difficult when there's two of those teams, and you know, there's just that mucky middle, like you said, that they're going to be trying to, you know, already sort of looking at the third wild card spot. You don't have a lot of time to have your setup guy be terrible for 6 weeks in the middle of the season. So it's going to be tough, but I don't know what you do. Is Zach Pop the answer?
I'm going to go ahead and say no. I'm going to go out on a limb right here and say no, Zach Pop's not the answer. You make a good point about Swanson in terms of the personal stuff involved, and there are mitigating factors with him. He's not a pitcher I'm giving up on just yet. Like, there's some weird stuff going on with him, right? Like, he's given up 4 home runs off his splitter already. He did that in all of last year. So his home run to strikeout ratio on that pitch last year was 4 home runs and 58 strikeouts. And this year it's 4 home runs and 3 strikeouts. And that's not like a real stat, but it is just, it goes to show how weird some of the stuff has been. But you look at his stuff and it's fundamentally the same stuff. Like, it does seem to be, you know, a bit of a control command issue, and that, you know, again, him having a difficult spring makes that make sense. Like, he's always been a bit of a weird pitcher in terms of his, you know, his relatively low velocity for how effective he is and the sky high fly ball rate. And so he's been someone people have been reluctant to believe in at times, even when the results are good. But I think he's going to come back around. Romano is weird too, like, because the velocity is there, you know, 96.2, like, that's 0.5 down from last year, but it's fine. One thing that's a little bit interesting in a dark sense with this stuff is the slider's not, you know, we just talked about Manoah and the horizontal break, and that's really, when you're looking at movement on a slider, that's a huge stat to look at. And it's hard to get pitches to break horizontally compared to vertically. Like, there's almost every pitch is going to have significant drop, but the horizontal movement is sort of what you're putting on it. And last year he was 12% above average, 4.5 inches of break. And this year it's 40% below average, 2.7 inches of break. So that is a really significant difference in the pitch that he throws, you know, essentially 50% of the time. He's still getting whiffs with it. It's the fastball he's not getting as many whiffs with. I don't know. We'll see. But he's a little bit scary, I guess, because Swanson's ugliness is kind of out there in full view. Like, his ERA is 16.5. And Romano's at 4.5, but his expected ERA is at 8.07. So, at 4.05 on the ERA. So, like, there's some troubling indicators. Like, people are already worried about Romano, and you could argue that he's been more worrying than you've seen. But, you know, again, it's already, you know, it's only 7 games. It's 6.2 innings. I don't think there's room for panic on any of them, but for a team that lacks offensive firepower, kind of even the good version of the Blue Jays where you imagine all the pieces work the way they're supposed to work, it's still not an offensive powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination. So you really do need the bullpen to protect tight leads. And Garcia has been great. And, you know, some of the other guys have been decent. Trevor Richards has been all right. But it is a group that has gone from a pretty important strength to a pretty gnarly weakness in a very short period of time.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I'm gonna try to look it up while I talk, but, like, the amount of, like, high leverage innings that they've had to pitch, I don't know what will count for leverage or not, but they've had a lot of innings from the bullpen, and a lot of innings in situations where where the games are tight, right, even if it doesn't necessarily qualify for higher leverage. And it's just it's felt like every night, maybe not as much lately, but yeah, there have been so many guys down all the time, it feels like, because they're going out and they're having to pitch every couple of days, and just are they grinding them into dust, and are they not capable of doing the Rays thing where they just, somebody else bubbles up from the lab, where maybe putting all this mileage on Garcia, on Swanson, on Romano is destined to bite them a little bit. But also, just to you know, be even-handed about it, you know, Romano missed spring training too, right? He had the injury. He didn't, you know, wasn't a full spring training at least. And I think that has to be factored in too, because like you say, it's a scant number of innings so far. I mean, I think the appearance number is higher than the inning number because he hasn't necessarily made it through each time he's been asked to get three outs. But yeah, it is tough, and it's another thing that they're just going to have to ride with. And I think something that is also, you know, contributing to the negative vibes, because there was other people have just already sort of conditioned themselves. And like I said, I did it too, like in his debut, like understandably so, but people are already like, oh, you know, it just hasn't felt, you don't want to bring up BJ Ryan, but like, you know, the difference between year one BJ Ryan and year three when he came back from the Tommy John is kind of like, the arc doesn't feel too dissimilar to some things about Jordan Romano, who has, you know, continued to be very effective, but just it doesn't feel the same as it did a couple of years ago.
Before we get out of here, I think that, you know, in honor, I guess, of this being Blue Jays happy hour, we should probably discuss at least one thing that's going well for the Blue Jays. And one of the guys I'm fascinated by right now is Danny Jansen. And I know we have a relatively small sample on him this year. We got 13 games, you know, WRC plus of 205. Just, you know, pretty incredible across the board when you're talking about high walk rate, low strikeout rate, all this power. There's no denying, I think, right now that on a sort of per game, per at bat basis, he's been the best Blue Jay. And that's been true at times over the last couple of years as well, especially during 2022. And he's such a fascinating figure, partly just because of how he's remade himself offensively over the years, and, you know, even defensively when he was not considered a great defender early on and became sort of a gold glove finalist type guy. And you've got a player who's on the last year of his contract and a team that is, you know, not on a great trajectory right now. Where are you at with one, sort of what you're seeing with Jansen right now, but also where the Blue Jays might be on the extension to trade pendulum with him? Because he's a very odd extension candidate and an odd guy to value on the trade market as well, as good as he's been and as good as he is.
No, you're absolutely right. And I, you know, where am I at? I'd like to see Danny Jansen play for the Toronto Blue Jays for a long time. I mean, I think he's just been so fun, even with the, you know, that's more heart than head, I would say. And I'm sure a lot of fans are kind of in the same boat. It's just because when he's been healthy, he's been such a good and productive hitter. And it does drive me a little bit nuts that he's the guy who's just yanking it over the wall, and so many people are like, oh, they've got this notion in their head, which is not really borne out by the facts, I don't think, that they've really, really preached to everybody, use the whole field, go, you know, which there has been an extent of that, I think, but also, you know, it's harder to see when you have a Bo Bichette, when you have a Vladimir Guerrero Jr., guys who, you know, that is what has made them successful, and people get all sorts of weird ideas about what Guillermo Martinez is telling them when he's, you know, just chucking, you know, underhanding balls to guys and telling them to, like, you know, monitoring their mechanics. Like they seem to think that these coaches have just gone in and ruined really good hitters who don't have any agency in their own careers. But nonetheless, and Danny Jansen is sort of the mold breaker of that, and he's one of these guys where this idea that the Jays don't want players to do that, and he's been successful against it, has sort of created this this tension, I think, between, you know, where fans are, like, he's become, I think I mentioned, like, the David Schneider is similar, like, he's become an avatar of why this, you know, why the guys in charge, the eggheads, don't know what the hell they're doing. Could be some truth to that for sure. But just has been a really fun guy. But in terms of, like, yeah, what do you do? I mean, I think that there will be teams that would have interest in a bat like that if he can stay healthy. He's still, I mean, even if you look at his career numbers, it's not, you know, it's not what I think people think of in their heads, because it's just been so broken up by this, the IL stints, right? Like, you know, last year, 116 WRC plus, it's a very good year, especially for his position, but, you know, 205 right now, 141 in 2022. And then of course, all of these are just fractions of a season. So it's hard to know what he really is. Even if you don't take in anything before like 2021, the most generous would be to start from 2022, and then, yeah, he looks like one of the better hitters out there. But it's tough. It's very tough. I think somebody will I think somebody will pay him. He might be one of those guys. I mean, I think we kind of are going to look at a different frontier of free agency, and we saw that sort of start this year anyway, especially for, unfortunately, he's probably going to fall into those mid-tier kind of guys where he, you know, might be looking at you know, having to go year to year, not certainly not getting, you know, beyond three, maybe. Like, is somebody giving Danny Jansen 4 years? Is somebody getting three? I don't know. I do think, like, as an impact bat, perhaps at the trade deadline, should he become a piece, that they're you know, what are you going to get? I don't know. Probably an arm that you could use right now, but that's not really the solution. But I think there should be some value there. I would like to think a man with a 205 weighted runs created plus.
Oh, I mean, if he's got a 205, sorry, a 205 weighted runs created plus, you're talking, you know, prime Barry Bonds. So, you know, traditionally a market for players like that. Yeah, I think you have to contemplate dealing them if they get to that position. And there traditionally has been a bit of a quiet market on catchers at the trade deadline, just because teams are worried about integrating them into their pitching staff. It's not like you've never seen catchers move, but it's not as easy. But at the same time, a team could see him as kind of a DH solution too. If he's really 100%. Rolling, like if he's sort of 2022 Danny Jansen, like he could be, and as weird as this would have sounded in, you know, 2019, he could be perceived as sort of an impact bat more so than as a defensive weapon. The thing with Jansen is, like, on one hand, you are reluctant to extend him because he's continued to have injuries kind of again and again and again. And there's just, he has the one season with over 100 games played. And on the other hand, like, if you, and this is, you know, this is Fangraph's value number by season, and it's pretty crude, but I'm just going to kind of go from 2019 on. 2019, 14.4 million. 2020, obviously shortened season, 3 million. Then 2021, 11.8 million. 2022, 21.4 million. 2023, 15.6 million. This season, through 13 games, 7 million in value, which is absolutely insane. But if you look at it kind of like that, and you know, you were going to be entering his early 30s, and there's additional injury concern, of course, but if you're getting anything close to any of that, you are going to, I think, get good value on the contract. And I think they are in a good position with having Kirk for a couple more years as a backup plan / platoon partner. Like, I think you just kind of keep this situation rolling, because unless Jansen just has this monster year where he's this force in the middle of the Blue Jays lineup, which I guess is in play based on what he's done, but it's a bit of a stretch.
It kind of changes your plans perhaps too, yeah, if he does do that.
For sure. I think this Jansen-Kirk situation, as much as people like to bemoan the loss of Gabriel Moreno, which is fair because he's a fantastic catcher and would have been a good kind of long-term building block, which the Blue Jays lack, I kind of like this situation. I think that if you can possibly afford him, keeping him around for, 2-3 years on another deal, like, I'd be comfortable paying Danny Jansen a decent amount of money, because even if he's going to get hurt, like, I'm just confident that he's going to produce at such a high level when he's around. And maybe, in 2025 here, you don't have a Justin Turner type and you have more of that 2022 option where you're moving them in and out of the DH spot if they're rolling, especially if Kirk is doing well, or you're fitting them to the pitcher who they frame or block better, depending on who your starters are at that time. Like, I think there's a very good chance that, teams don't like to take a risk on guys who have durability question marks. But as a result, I think it's very likely that you would get a good deal on Danny Jansen. And for a guy who, again, is relatively young as he hits free agency and just so effective offensively, and maybe you could even, again, contemplate, like, if, I don't know, in a world where Vladdy seems to be on the way out or something, like, is Jansen a long-term first baseman, for instance? Like, people haven't really talked about that yet because he's so good defensively. But, if you signed him to a longer-term contract and you had other options, it's something worth contemplating if the offense kind of holds up in that kind of 120 WRC plus or better. But there aren't a ton of first basemen in the league that are super reliable to get you to that number, and maybe Jansen is. I mean, again, it's a conversation for the end of the season, and it kind of depends on what they do at the deadline and whether they extend guys and all that stuff. But you could, in theory, try and mitigate his his injury issues by moving him off catcher.
No, I think that would be smart. I mean, but can you not just see him, you know, popping home runs over the Green Monster, just being a, you know, a dirtbag Red Sox guy for forever and ever? They'll have to avoid that from scenario from happening as well. But yeah, I think that that's something. I mean, they're the only team that can talk to him right now about a contract. So I think that that's a winner in fans' eyes too. Even though, you know, I'm making my petty gripes about the weirdos who decided they know what the coaches are telling them every minute of the day. But like, yeah, I mean, he has been a really good positive story, and it has been really enjoyable to watch. And there aren't a lot of guys around at the moment who are who you can say that about. So yeah. Yeah, free Danny Jansen. Let's go. Let's bring him back.
Yeah, he's basically him and Davis Schneider and, you know, Justin Turner, if you don't look at what's happened lately. And we were thinking of getting to that, and maybe we'll get to that next week. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, he is really a solitary figure among good Blue Jays stories right now.
And this is the thing. We talked fire sale off the top. Like, what? I don't know. Do you have to do a hard reset if you're trading Bo and Vlad? But maybe you can get something back enough. Maybe you have enough faith in Aurelvis Martinez and some of the other guys that are down there that you know you can move on from Vlad and Bo, get some less long term focused pieces in return, and stay in that middle that it's going to be, you know, so very entertaining for everybody to experience for the next decade.
What an exciting vision of the future you paint. Getting rid of the...
I mean, I wouldn't put it past these jokers, though. What
homegrown like, start. Have? Well, no, I mean, that's the getting Trent Thornton, and that's getting Billy McKinney. You know what I mean? Like, when they did their first sell-off, they had a little bit of an eye towards, let's get guys who are close, even if they're not the highest ceiling, and kind of turn this boat around quickly. And that fundamentally did not work. But we'll see. I mean, again, it's no guarantee that happens, but yeah, the picture you paint is...
There's no guarantee it doesn't happen.
It is very much in play. And we'll find out over the next couple of weeks just how in play it is. I think if they drop deeper and deeper below 500, what a note to end on. Thank you everybody for tuning in and listening. We appreciate you guys when you leave ratings and reviews. We appreciate you even more. But even if you are a passive listener, we love you as well, and we will be back with you again next week.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh.
Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.